The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome to Kip Case and Curry Show. Screw the stock market. Let's go ahead and invest and be disciplined and make some money in something we love to watch, and that being sports. I'm Tony Curry, your co-host. Of course, we have Kip Kiefer. He is the executive director of the Birmingham Racing Commission and an expert handicapper of his own. And Case Kiefer, and yes, it's his son, sports editor for the Las Vegas Sun, and he's live from Las Vegas as we do our weekly Kip, Case, and Curry Show podcast. How you guys doing? Everything good?
Everything's great.
Fantastic. Great to have you aboard. Got a lot to get into. Of course, we just had the Belmont this past weekend. Chase has covered the first four Stanley Cup games. Vegas can close it out tonight at home. They're up 3-1 right now. Major League Baseball season, about 60 to 70 games into the season. Have there been any big surprises? And also the College World Series and how gambling has changed in the world of college sports. I do want to throw out one trivia question to both of you right off the bat, see if you can nail this. Of course, Denver won their first NBA championship last night. They beat Miami 4-1. Which league, MLB, NHL, NFL, or NBA, has the most teams not to win a championship ever? Or take a stab.
Oh wow, that's an interesting question. I'm gonna guess the NFL, but that's probably wrong because it has a lot more history. But there's I can think off the top of my head a lot of teams that haven't won it. Case probably knows.
Case, you know?
I do not know. You have a bad prediction there, but I mean, my immediate reaction would be the NBA, actually. But I know maybe the Nuggets changed that. I'm not sure. I'm excited to hear the answer.
Kip, you nailed it. 12 teams, the National Football League, including my Cincinnati Bengals, have never won a Super Bowl. The NHL's got 11 teams that have never won. The NBA now has 10 teams since Denver won their first last night. Major League Baseball, only 6 teams: the Rockies, Brewers, Pods, Mariners, Tampa Bay, and Texas. Only 6 teams in Major League Baseball. You want to talk about parity, have never won a championship. So, Case, let's get into the game last night. The Denver Nuggets, 3-2 against the spread in the finals. Interesting enough, 4 of the 5 games went under the total, and all the games' totals were 219 and under. And the last time Denver had a total of 219 or under was back on February 13th of this season. They went 39 straight games where their total was 220 or higher. And that game, February 13th, was against the Miami Heat in a game that actually went over the total. So if you are an over guy, which a lot of gamblers are, because you feel like if you got the over, you're always in play, you probably took a bath. But how did you think the series went? And what was it like in Las Vegas for some of those over-unders?
I think it went pretty much according to script. I think the most likely scenario going in was Nuggets in 5. Now, you probably would have thought the Heat get one of the home games. I think they gave us all hope for a better series when they stole game 2 in Denver. And I think that the under trend, more than anything to me, emphasizes that, I mean, the Heat kind of did what they needed to do. They needed to slow it down. They needed to muddy up the game. Even if you go back to game 4, they needed to frustrate Nikola Jokic, which I didn't think was possible, but they did. He didn't have a great game. And the deciding one, they even slowed Jamal Murray at times. But then just these other guys for the Nuggets really stepped up, even when their top two weren't necessarily clicking. This going back 2 games now. But I mean, Aaron Gordon with the game of his life, Bruce Brown and in-game situations was unbelievable. And the Heat ultimately just didn't have the offensive creators to keep pace, even in a low-scoring game like last night. So a little disappointing. It probably could have been a better series if the Heat could have tapped into some of that magic they found throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. But, I guess it was a little bit lower scoring than we thought, but odds wise, I think this pretty much went, this went chalk, as we say in gambling. Nuggets in 5 was probably always the most realistic scenario.
Yeah. And let me just add, Boston Celtics have to be going, oh, now they can't make a shot, because it was unbelievable in that series how Miami's role players just were unconscious from the 3-point line. And it was really kind of painful to watch that crashed back to earth in this series. Last night, Martin and Strus, 2-for-17 from the 3-point line. That's the only hope that Miami had, was to play their style of game, slow things down like they did, and make it tough for Denver. But they got to knock down those threes, and I think that at the end of the day was the key to the series. They just couldn't make an outside shot.
Yeah, and I will add to that. I don't know what happened to Jimmy Playoff. I have no I have no clue. I know he had a huge game in the last series, and we just kept I kept seeing that over under of 26.5, 27.5, 28.5. It's weird because as a gambler, as a bettor, whenever I see a guy having an off game, we just assume that he's going to come back on fire, and Jimmy never did that. Now, at one point, I think he did score 12 straight points in a row in the fourth quarter, but it was a little too late for the Miami Heat to come back and win that basketball game. But Kaystad, what was it like to watch people that had Miami in the series? Because I had the over 5.5 games in this series. And again, when they won that game too at Denver, I was like, okay, this is a slam dunk. They're going to win one game at home. But Jimmy Butler, he's just a no-show. And I, you know, this whole idea of him getting in the paint and just dishing out every single time, even when he had open shots, was just strange to me. What did you think?
Yeah, well, you know, we saw Jimmy last night was asked after the game, you know, how much the ankle injury hobbled him after the Knicks series. And he said, not at all. They're the better team. We lost. But that's kind of his MO. That's always what he was going to say. In my opinion, he was a little banged up. I mean, if you go back and watch those Milwaukee games, the one game he had, what, 51, 52 to eliminate him. I mean, he was just on another level. And I do think the wear and tear of the playoffs eventually wore him down. I actually was really impressed with him in game four. I thought somehow he mustered up like all the energy he had late. I mean, I know he didn't put up the gigantic scoring total, but I believe he had 25 points, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists. And, you know, not like the Milwaukee series, but it did seem like at times he was kind of putting the team on his back. And, you know, he almost willed them there. They got to within 5 in the end until, again, Bruce Brown took over, of all people. I felt like that was kind of his last gasp. And he certainly looked rough last night in Denver's clinching game. Didn't really have it there. So I don't think he was 100% healthy. And just, you know, with the surrounding players on this team, I mean, I know they were a lot different in the playoffs, but there's a reason why they were in the playoff, in the play-in. There's a reason why they were an 8 seed. And if you don't have your superstar 100%, which I'm convinced he wasn't, it was just too tall of a mountain to climb against, you know, the best player in the NBA and what had been one of the best teams from the beginning of the year.
Something that I let me follow that up real quick before we get into Major League Baseball. I am sick and tired of hearing these superstars say, you know, we just had a bad game. We need to play with more intensity. We need to play with more passion. We need to realize this is the NBA Finals. I'm like, well, Jimmy Butler's 33 years of age. What are you talking about? I mean, I don't want to hear my superstar talking about we need to play with more intensity. It is the NBA Finals. And Charles Barkley said something really interesting on TNT, and he said this after game two. He said, Jimmy Butler's done. He's like, he's out of steam. And I'm thinking to myself, does that really happen? Because, I mean, listen, we know it's a long season, and we realize the NBA playoffs are the longest playoff season of the four major sports, but not everyone just peters out. Was Jimmy Butler just tired?
Again, I still go to injury. I mean, I think tired was part of it too. I mean, these guys are playing at such an incredible level. I'm not saying he felt super fresh every day, but I still think we get a better level out of him if he never suffers that ankle injury. I mean, you know, at the time, a high ankle sprain, he missed what, one game? I mean, if that's during the regular season, he's missing a lot of time. So I know he's, I think it's admirable of him. He's not blaming it on that and not saying that, but I really do think that he wasn't the same guy injury wise. So I'm sure, you know, the tired had a little bit to do with it, but you know, I think he needs some rehab on that ankle, and it's playoff basketball. This is where legacies are made, obviously. And I think he pushed that off to be a part of this run.
Let's shift the emphasis from the hardwood to the diamond, case. We're about a third of the way through the Major League Baseball season already. And I think baseball is probably a more popular betting sport than a lot of people realize. Of course, there's action every day, 7 days of the week. And I know you follow baseball closely as I do. I guess the best way to kick this off is my observation that I'm kind of surprised so far this year, and I want your reaction. 3 of the top 4 payrolls in baseball, the Padres, Mets, and Phillies, all really kind of struggling right now. How much does that affect? Is the reputation and the personnel on those teams keep the lines every day pretty inflated for them, despite the fact that those teams aren't performing very well? What's your take on that and the overall first third of the season?
Yeah, I'm glad we're switching to baseball. I didn't have the best NBA season, to be honest, especially the crazy playoffs didn't help me with that. I just feel like I was all off. But I'll tell you, right, if we decided to end the baseball season a third of the way through, I mean, this might be my best betting season of all time. I feel like everything that I like to happen coming into the season has happened. The standings are set up perfectly for me. Awards are set up perfectly for me. I've been doing really well game by game. And I'm not just patting myself on the back. I'll tell you when I have a bad year and things. I didn't have a good NBA year, but yeah, baseball has been terrific. And as far as those three teams, the three largest payrolls all struggling, I agree with you. It's just such a case-by-case basis, though. And, you know, one thing I think you always got to keep in mind with betting is that this is a market and people are reacting to new information every day, whether that be how a team's playing, injuries, you know, baseball, there's so much numbers available now, you know, whether it's exit velocity. I mean, obviously pitching velocity for years, there's just so much. So I feel like I've seen a shift in a lot of those teams. The Mets, I can tell you from day one, I've been predominantly betting against. I mean, their big splashes were Justin Verlander in the offseason, of course, pairing him with Max Scherzer. And you just look at the age of that rotation. I think people see these big names and assume they're just going to stay superstars forever. And of course, Verlander is coming off of a Cy Young year. But I think that's just a mistake. Everything we know about aging and, you know, how pitchers age kind of showed some red flags here. They didn't really boost their lineup from last year. So I've been against the Mets, you know, on nearly a daily basis since the very beginning of the year. And it still continued that way. I don't think their odds have adjusted downwards enough. Now Pete Alonso out. As for the Padres, it's really kind of flipped for me. I was super anti-Padres coming into the year. So I'm happy they're 31-34. I have a win total under bet on them. I bet some long shots to win the West. I think I have the Diamondbacks at 50-1 and they're in the lead right now by four games. But I kind of feel like now things have overreacted on the Padres. I feel like everyone's super down on them, throwing dirt on them. And I'm actually finding myself betting on the Padres quite a bit day to day now. I think that lineup is still outstanding. You know, some guys have been in slumps. I mean, even Juan Soto got off to a slow start. Xander Bogaerts hasn't really been himself. I think that hitting is going to stabilize. And I think they're still a pretty dangerous team. I don't think they're going to win the division. Maybe they don't even make the playoffs. But I think from this point forward, they're going to be a profitable team to bet on. And the Phillies may be somewhere in the middle. They're a team that numbers wise, I always really like the numbers I put together. I had tickets on them last year to win the World Series, win the National League, kind of helped save my baseball year last year when I wasn't as hot. I wasn't as high on them coming into this year. In fact, I think I even bet them to miss the playoffs. But now on a game basis, I feel like I've been betting them a lot. I feel like they're a little undervalued. I think some of their pitchers at the end of the rotation have good stuff, just haven't put it all together. We know how, you know, high of a ceiling their lineup has. If I'm picking another team out of the East, I still don't believe in the Marlins. I think they have some voodoo winning all these one run games. Maybe the Phillies don't make the playoffs, but I think they kind of make a run here and they're the clear number two in the NL East. I just think they have a little bit too much. And I still trust Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola so much, even though they're not having a great year. So yeah, kind of three different tales for those three teams, but that's the way I'm looking at them from a betting perspective.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Case, you mentioned the Braves. They're having a phenomenal year. Despite some stumbles where you don't really expect, they went out and played an Oakland team last week. Of course, the MLB schedule really kind of screwed them there. They played Sunday night baseball till midnight, didn't get to Oakland until 6 a.m. Eastern time and had to play an afternoon game. They lost 2 out of 3 to the moribund, terrible A's, and they had a 7-game winning streak after that as unfortunately ended the last 2 days with losses to two more hapless teams, the Nationals, and last night blowing a 5-1 lead late against Detroit. But the Braves' pitching has been very much affected by the loss of Kyle Wright and Max Fried. Fried's starting to make moves to come back, but the Braves' accomplishments so far this year with their pitching really crippled has been phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two best teams in the league, you know, knock on wood here, because there were two teams I was super high on coming into the year, and those were the Braves and the Rays. Baseball, it rarely plays out that the two best teams end up playing each other, but if it's Braves, Rays in the World Series, it will be a good day in this household. I might be taking a vacation or something. I still think they're the two best teams. But it is kind of interesting that they kind of have similar issues right now. The Rays, I mean, lost Jeffrey Springs and Drew Rasmussen from their pitching staff. Now, I think the Rays have the pitching infrastructure that they've still been fine. But, I mean, both these teams are kind of running low on starting arms. But I think you just look at some of the numbers. You know, obviously pitching and hitting are the two most important things in baseball. And the Rays pitching metrics, I mean, whether it be Sierra, XFIP, or some of the things I like to look at more advanced, they're just so far and above everyone else, and they have been for years. Now, I think a lot of that is their numbers department, some of the stuff that they do that's different from the rest of the league. And then on the Braves side, I mean, hitting wise and some of the StatCast data, the Braves just hit the ball harder, further, get more barrels on balls than anyone in the league. I think hitting is the easiest thing to sustain itself. And I just can't imagine the Braves not looking like a powerhouse going into the playoffs because they're just hitting so well. And I guess the third element of baseball while we're on it, obviously defense, which I would weight a little bit lower than those other two, but the Rays, I think lead the league by far in defensive runs saved right now, a great defensive team. So I don't know. It's not very often we see the two best teams play in the World Series, but I think the Rays and the Braves, with apologies to the Rangers because they've been ridiculous and numbers wise, they're right up there. I think the Rays and the Braves are kind of in a tier of their own right now.
Yeah. Where are we when the Oakland Athletics have won 6 games in a row and they've lost 50 games already this year? I mean, the season's just been absolutely crazy. The Kip Case and Curry show here. Kip Kiefer, of course, the executive director of the Birmingham Racing Commission and an expert handicapper in his own right. Case Kiefer, the sports editor for the Las Vegas Sun, he joins us live from Las Vegas. Back on May 1st, the executive director of the Ohio Casino Control Commission issued an emergency order prohibiting any wagers on Alabama's baseball program after receiving a report from an independent monitor detailing 2 suspiciously large bets placed in advance of the Crimson Tide's matchup against LSU for a particular game. Case, first of all, when something like that happens, and obviously we used to have Atlantic City and Las Vegas. Everything was encapsulated or compartmentalized in those two areas of the country. Now it's in 23 different states. It's all over the place. Does that raise any eyebrows in Las Vegas when you see these things at a local level?
You know, certainly raises eyebrows. I do believe the firm that detected this is actually Las Vegas based. I know one of the heads of that, Matthew Holt, who was at Cantor Gaming CG Technologies for a long time, now started this U.S. Integrity program that kind of monitors the market. And U.S. Integrity was the one that set off alarm bells. The story was kind of crazy to me. I believe, you know, whoever the coach was contacting was on the grounds at Great American Ballpark, and FanDuel had no wagers on the Alabama game that day until he contacts this guy, and there's an abnormally large wager, which I still don't think we have clarity on what that means. But when there's no bets on a game and all of a sudden there's, you know, probably a 4-figure wager, I think that's certainly something that, you know, it is going to be looked at. I think a lot of people look at this, though, when you say raised eyebrows, is like, you know, this is a scary thing. Look how much corruption there is in sports. Whereas, you know, to me, it's kind of the opposite. I mean, years ago, maybe this would have been easy to get away with before mm-hmm. everything was connected, and I don't even know get away with. I don't want to infer there was some crime done here. It certainly looks bad optically, but you know, this is kind of a confirmation that the system works to me. I mean, this was a really low level sporting event in terms of betting handle, and you know, immediately there were alarm bells, immediately there were phones ringing, and you saw the coach get fired, and you see a full scale investigation launched. So you know, I really think sports might be cleaner than ever, and there's a lot more watchdogs, there's a lot more people looking over this thing than ever before, and I think this was an example of that.
There's a lot more insider trading and stock market play than there is in sports betting. I got news for you. And I can make that argument because everyone's like, oh, here we go. We knew it was going to be following through, and next thing you know, we're betting on high school football games, which, by the way, you can do here in the state of Alabama. You have to do it through your man. You can't do it through a site. But I made the argument, hey, listen, it works. I mean, they caught it. They found it. So we know that college football is obviously a huge betting tool. We know that March Madness is unbelievable. Start with the brackets and of course, March Madness, and everyone's involved in that. How has gambling in college sports changed over the last few years? Now that obviously it's a lot easier to gamble, you can do it from your phone. You do have the FanDuels and the Sports Kings and the fantasy leagues that are a big part of that. But how has it changed? And do you see more gambling in college sports coming up? And I'll use college baseball right now. The College World Series is going on. I don't really remember over the last 2 or 3 years being able to wager on anything in college sports. And I was sitting out at the Hoover Met here locally in Birmingham making bets on the LSU Tigers when I think they were playing Vanderbilt. But how has it changed in Las Vegas? Are you seeing more action there, and where do you see it going?
Yeah, it's certainly got bigger and bigger. You know, I think college baseball, it's still pretty low level right now, as I just said in the last question. But I mean, now you're getting games on a daily basis. It seems, especially now in the College World Series, people are interested. So that's one area where you've seen it soar. And even women's college basketball this year, I know there were more eyeballs on the women's tournament than ever before. And there were lines basically at every sports book here on games. So some of those sports that, you know, sometimes maybe you'd get a line on the championship game, I think now are becoming more commonplace. I'd actually probably wouldn't credit Las Vegas for a lot of that. I think it is a lot of the kind of power players you mentioned in the industry, you know, the FanDuels, the DraftKings, which actually aren't licensed in Las Vegas since, you know, the casinos have such a pull in the gaming board. It's still the casinos here. But those really big outfits that try to get lines on basically every game, they're the ones that, you know, started pushing this when it went nationwide. And, you know, I'm always for more things to bet on. So I think it's great. I think in a lot of ways we've made gigantic progress, you know, until 2001, you couldn't bet on UNLV games, even in Nevada when we were the only legalized state. You know, that's been changed, you know, a while ago now, but I think some people are still under the belief that that hasn't, that has, you know, there are some states that are still behind. And, you know, I don't think regulators really understand, you know, how tight the gambling market is. And, you know, what we kind of just talked about, how many checks are in place. I know in New Jersey, you can't bet on any New Jersey colleges. So Rutgers, if you look at DraftKings or whatever, and all their futures, it'll say like national championship without New Jersey. And then some other states, it's the same thing. I don't know off the top of my head, but I know there are some states that still don't let you wager on colleges. I think that's kind of silly. And I think as we get more educated in the space, that'll eventually be going away. But, you know, so there's still some speed bumps, but overall tremendous progress even since the time I've been out here, which is only about 15 years, but things are certainly changing.
Before we get into the NHL, and of course Vegas can close it out later on tonight against Florida, game five tonight, and of course Case will be covering that. He's covered the first four games, and actually Case and Kip have been to numerous playoff games to Las Vegas nights throughout the season, so I'm looking forward to hearing that talk. But I've always wondered, as a small-time guy, what kind of money we talking that raises the eyebrows of an Ohio commission or even of a Las Vegas. I always think to myself, man, it would have to be hundreds of thousands of dollars for me to be giving up anything, whether it's my playing eligibility at a college level or even gambling as a professional. I'm making millions of dollars a year. What could a $100,000 bet do or change? But what kind of money are we talking about that starts to raise eyebrows? And obviously you just mentioned, if there's nothing on a particular game, there's no bets at all of a sudden someone's dropping $9,000-$10,000 in a game, it does raise eyebrows. But what kind of money are we talking in Vegas?
Yeah, I mean, I think you brought up a great point in why I kind of roll my eyes and think it's ridiculous when people suggest that like professional athletes would be throwing games, or even even big time college athletes now with the NIL money. You just simply can't get down as much money as these guys are making almost on a game to game basis. You know, maybe that's different in like, I mean, you can get a really healthy bet down in something like the NBA finals or even the NFL week to week. But, you know, we're talking like we were just talking baseball, like a midweek baseball game. I mean, you're going to have to go through a lot of hoops. You're going to have to talk to people if you're probably betting any more than $5,000 at this point. And, you know, if there's some coordinated, you know, just hypothetically, if there's some effort to throw a game or influence the outcome, you're going to want to get so much money down on that. And it was a little easier to do 20 years ago before the internet really came into its own and before we had all this technology. I mean, you could just walk casino to casino, or there's a great Netflix documentary about the Arizona State points shaving scandal where they kind of detail how they did it. I just had a bunch of guys bringing bags of cash to different sports books at the same time. You didn't really know anything. I mean, now there would just be so many things ringing right away if you saw, you know, several $10,000 going in on the same side at all different sports books across the world at the same time. It just really goes back to what I said before. I just feel like there's a lot more checks and balances, and it's really hard to get down as much money to influence how much these guys are making. I mean, we know how we know what the coaches' salaries are. We know what the players' salaries are. It'd be really hard to throw a game, so to speak, in this day and age, in my opinion.
One historical footnote I'll throw in: the 1919 World Series, the White Sox players were offered $10,000 each to throw the series. A little bit different world we live in today, because those guys' average salary was only about $12,000 for the entire year. So we are in definitely a different dynamic than we once were.
There's no doubt.
Absolutely. That's funny.
All right, you want to get in the NHL? Go ahead, Kip.
Case, we've been watching this drama unfold throughout the playoffs. The Golden Knights, who were kind of, I think, dismissed a little bit, despite the fact that they were the number one seed in the Western Conference with more points. Edmonton Oilers seem to be the darling of the playoffs coming in, and a betting favorite in that series against the Golden Knights, but they dispatched them, knocked off the Stars, and now are on the verge of bringing a Stanley Cup to Las Vegas. Talk about tonight's game, what the numbers are, and also, I think people would be interested, since you're out there at Ground Zero and have watched this franchise since the day they dropped the first puck, what's it going to mean? I know the Las Vegas Aces broke through and won a championship last year in the WNBA, but this would be a major deal for Las Vegas at a time where pro sports is absolutely blowing up there.
It would be pretty incredible scene tonight. As far as to start with the betting perspective, absolutely insane number if you look at the rest of the series. But the Vegas now across the board, about a -180 favorite, a little bit more with the Panthers coming back at +165. And I think some people that maybe aren't super plugged in might look at that number and say, well, that's way too high. The last two games have been close. This was basically a pick'em series coming in. How can it get that high? But I think there's a few things at play here. We always see teams historically play a little bit better at home in an elimination game, which the Golden Knights are here, or in a clinching game, I guess I should say, for the winning side. So you have that factored in. And also, I mean, the Panthers are just super beaten up right now. There's some rumblings. Matthew Tkachuk, their best player, may not play tonight. It looks like he got his shoulder hurt pretty badly on a big collision with Keegan Kolasar in game four. He didn't end up playing near his allotment of time. He did come back at the end of the game and kind of lead their push to try to tie it up. But I mean, if Tkachuk is out, I think this could raise even more. And they have a couple other guys beaten up too. Brandon Montour has been one of their best players in this series. I expect him to play, but he's hobbled as well, as well as Duclair, another one of their star forwards. So, you know, the Panthers are beaten up. They're flying back across the country to Las Vegas where they haven't played well. So this is a big boost to the line, probably a little bit bigger than I'm comfortable with. I wouldn't suggest a bet on the Knights right now, because I think you look at the line, it's implying something like a 64% chance the Golden Knights win tonight. That's really high for hockey. So I don't know betting wise, but I certainly expect Vegas to win the series, and I think it probably happens tonight, and it's going to be a wild celebration when they do. I think like you said, we do have a lot of professional sports now in Vegas. We're a booming sports market, but I think the Golden Knights still hold a special place in people's hearts more than any other team. I think they're the most beloved team here, and it's only been 6 years. I know other fan bases kind of mock that, oh, they're long suffering 6 years, these fans finally get their moment. But I think a lot of them do feel like it's long suffering. They've been upset in the Western Conference finals twice. They had this terrible loss in their second year to the Sharks in round one, lost the Stanley Cup in their first year too, of course. So it's kind of been building up to this moment. I think it's going to be a gigantic celebration, and it's going to be quite the scene if they win it here, and then potentially with a parade a few days down the road.
Tony Curry, I know you would like to be on hand if they wrap it up tonight.
Yes.
Probably Friday or so. Imagine a championship parade down the strip carrying the Stanley Cup. You think that's going to be a party?
Well, anytime I'm in Las Vegas, there's a parade. What are you talking about? I'm the one walking naked out of Caesars at 3 o'clock in the morning down the middle of the strip. Let me ask you this, Case. Is there a particular fan base in the history of Vegas that comes to Vegas just to watch the games that spends more money when they do win than when they lose? Because I would think, Las Vegas, I would think there's going to be a lot of people. I mean, I was thinking to myself, okay, you're in Las Vegas. What do you do when you win a championship? You usually go to a casino and drink, which is what you do anyway. But is there the Dallas Cowboys, the New England Patriots, is there any other type of fan base that comes in hordes out to Las Vegas to watch games? And certainly March Madness is huge, that spends an absorbent amount of money when they win.
That's a really good question. I think there'd be that'd be a good study for the visitor committee to commission or something. I mean, just anecdotally, I guess I have to go more by the games. I think the biggest at this point, the biggest collection of fans when they're here is when they're playing one of these teams. I think for the Knights, seems like some of the Canadian teams, probably the Maple Leafs and the Oilers. I mean, they bring so many people, at least during the regular season when they're playing, and I'm sure they aren't tight about celebrating when things go right. I remember one Maple Leafs game a couple years ago where ticket prices were just enormous. It might have actually been on New Year's Eve, so that's probably why they really stimulated the economy there. The NFL wise, like I said, the Cowboys haven't been to Allegiant Stadium yet. I know the Steelers come here next year. It seems like there's always tons of Steelers fans mulling about. So Steelers maybe. When the Eagles came here, it was just a wave of green, and I'm sure they actually lost. So I guess that ruins the celebration. They weren't spending money in celebration, but I'm sure they were still gambling their sorrows away. The Eagles are one that stands out that had a ton of fans. The Bears had a ton of fans, and they did win that game, one of their few wins the last couple of years. So maybe the Bears, too, to throw out a few.
You're listening to the Kip, Case, and Curry Show. We're helping you make disciplinary measures and, of course, investments and things you love to watch in sports and maybe make some cash doing that. Of course, he is Kip Kiefer, the executive director of the Birmingham Racing Commission and expert handicapper. Case Kiefer, who, yes, is his son. He is the sports editor for the Las Vegas Sun. He's out live in Las Vegas. I'm Tony Curry. In Case's calls, we like to mix these in during the show and some things that perhaps Case is looking at and maybe most recently making some wagers on. What you like, Case?
All right. Well, since, football prep is in full gear, why don't we just go absolutely all the way to the top, both NFL and college football. I'm going to give you a championship future to make. Let's start in the NFL, because I think, knowing you guys as part of the country, this will be the less controversial one. I think everyone can maybe see this, but all of a sudden the Buffalo Bills have drifted to as high as 10-1 to win the Super Bowl. I think that is just a ridiculous number, way too high. If you can find the 10-1 fire on that immediately, even 9-1, which I actually bet before I saw the 10-1, so I'm kicking myself now, I think is fine. I think the Bills are going to be the best team in the NFL next year. I feel like there's no buzz around them because they didn't make these splashy offseason signings that we see a lot of these other big AFC teams make. And, every year it's like we repeat the same song and dance. You make these big trades, these big signings, and all of a sudden the market shifts at this time of year and goes too far. The fact of the matter is the Bills, for the majority of last season, obviously not the end, were rated as the best team in football, looked like the best team in football. They just had an insane rash of injuries that kind of handicapped them at the end of the season. But still, it took the canceled game to take them out of the number one seed in the playoffs. Of course, we know what happened in the playoffs, that they lost to the Bengals. But it seemed like it was a day where just a lot of people, had their worst game. I think Josh Allen rarely had a game that bad. Their whole secondary, they basically had no secondary. I just think this team is so strong. And to be getting them at 10-1, the AFC is going to be a gauntlet. Maybe you want to look for a champion in the NFC because it's going to be a little bit weaker. But if there's one team I'm zeroing in on, I think everyone's kind of forgotten about the Bills. And at 10-1, I'm kind of all over them this year. I've also bet some Josh Allen MVP at 9-1. If you can find that as well. But yeah, so for the Super Bowl, I'm going to go Bills 9-1. Let's transition to college football. So I'm going to give you a college football playoff championship future. On a show with Kip last year, I already gave out Texas 30-1. Literally, I think the day after the season ended last year. So that was my first bet. I've written about LSU 20-1. Those are the two I was kind of carrying into this week. But I hate to regret to inform the Southeast listeners, I have made a third bet this week, and I went with Ohio State at 8-1. Just once I dug into more numbers, I thought this was an insane price. Look, if you're telling me to pick one team, I think Georgia's the best team in the nation. I think they're the most likely national champion. But let's just rewind back a few months. We had that instant classic between Georgia and Ohio State. Georgia was the better team. They ended up winning by 1 point. But it was a great game. It could have gone either way. They have kind of similar situations. They're both having to break in a new quarterback. But Ohio State actually has a little bit more returning production elsewhere coming back. For Georgia to be at, as low as plus 150 here in Las Vegas to win the national championship, that's a 40% chance to win the national championship. Ohio State 8-1, that's an 11% chance. That is just a ginormous goal for what might be the two most talented teams in the nation. Maybe we get lucky and Georgia loses a game. I know they have that Ole Miss and Tennessee back-to-back, and you could dive in and bet them at an inflated price right now. But I just think at plus 150, 40%, arguably no team should be 40% to win the national championship. I think a really important part of sports book betting is, learning to think probabilistically, not just betting Georgia because, they're the best team. I know it sounds simple, but, 40% to 11%, I keep harping on that. I think that's just crazy. I had some concerns about the Buckeyes because they're kind of undermanned up front this year compared to past years. But it really seems like they addressed that after the spring game. They it's hard to get impact transfers this late, but it seemed like they really had their eyes keyed in on some people. They got a really good tackle from San Diego State that I think is going to bolster the offensive line, and got a defensive lineman from Ole Miss. I just look at this as a team without much weakness. If you think Kyle McCord could step in and be a decent quarterback, and basically everyone has stepped into Ryan Day's system and been a decent quarterback. So again, not saying Ohio State's going to win it, but 8-1, a little high to me. I think there's just such a huge gap after Georgia won it 2 years in a row. And Kip can attest, I've been on his shows, I've played Georgia each of the last 2 years at 10-1 and 5-1, but there's a big difference from those prices and +150. So if you're looking for the best bet on the board right now, I still think LSU or Texas, if you can get them 20-1 or higher, is decent. But I added Ohio State at 8-1 this week.
And since the finals are tonight in the NHL, Las Vegas right now favored by about $1.30, or buck, should I should say $1.80 to $1.90. You mentioned the plus side about $1.65. Look at the over under in that particular game. Every game so far has been 5.5 to 6. I know Bobrovsky was actually pulled in a game earlier in this season in the 7-2 loss, but give me a play on the over under if you don't necessarily like a side.
Yeah, that's tough. I might ever so slightly lean towards the over. I feel like you've seen Florida kind of, I don't know what effort we're going to get out of Florida tonight. And if things start going wrong early, you know, maybe we see a kind of a avalanche here. Maybe they get a little chippy like they've been throughout the series, and the penalty whistle gets going in. There's only one penalty in game four, but 5.5, pretty low. Right now I'm seeing a lot of 5.5 -120 here in Las Vegas. It's not something I'm going to be betting myself, but I'm also not going to be betting the side. So I guess if I absolutely had to, 5.5, I might take a taste of the over and hope that Florida reverts to their physical ways, as they like to call it. We get some power plays and we see some goals that way.
Finally, how many times do you see people in Las Vegas crying over their drinks when they've lost an over-under bet because of an open net goal at the end of a game?
I think it's actually usually the opposite. I mean, if you're in the arena, you can hear people cheering when there's an empty net, because I think people that come to the game want to bet on the over. So, yeah, I think more likely it's a positive outlook. They're happy that it pushes it over.
I was hoping that was going to happen in game four when it was 3-2. I was like, open the net. Let's go, baby. Give me that 4-2. It didn't happen. This is the Kip Case and Curry Show.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.